good morning and welcome to NewsX. We're live on DSTV channel 421, GoTV channel 125, across all our social media handles. We are Joe News on TV. Coming up within the next 60 minutes, government commences implementation of new curriculum for senior high schools despite criticism from stakeholders. We'll bring you updates from the campaign trail as well here on The Bulletin. My name is Faustina Safo. Plus business updates. You need to stay with us. Please take a seat to be my guest. Thanks for choosing us. We are your home of independent, fearless and credible journalism. Now we start with the health sector. Health authorities in the Ashanti region, they are increasing preventive measures against the outbreak and possible spread of cholera. This comes as there's a rise in cholera cases across the country. Public education has been identified as key to either preventing an outbreak or breaking the transmission of this waterborne disease. Ohim Interia of our health desk has more in the following report.
Director General of Ghana Health Services, Dr. Patrick Kumar Abuaji, in a release, detailed response measures being undertaken by the service to prevent further spread of cholera. Though the Ashanti region is yet to confirm a case, health authorities have heightened preventive measures. Regional Health Director Dr. Fred Adumako Boateng says his outfit is concerned with developments in Greater Accra region, since the Ashanti region shares similar demographics, including economic and business activities. He tells Joy News, health authorities are on high alert to avert a possible outbreak.
As we speak, I think the only region that have gotten confirmed cases is actually Greater Accra region. But the disease of such nature, you cannot sit aloof. For if you we remember, even the reason why if we did the polio supplementary immunization activity. You remember that the isolate, the environmental isolate of the polio that we did, share the same genetic composition as that of Algeria. So you can imagine that even if a disease can cross countries, borders, then therefore when you are just nearby, and then looking at the dynamic nature of how the population move from one area to other, then it means that all of us should be prepared and then preempt preventive measures to make sure that you don't really record.
Health authorities are advocating strict infection prevention control practices in public places such as schools, banks and hospitals. Dr. Adumako Boateng is encouraging residents to stick to good hygiene and basic practices like hand washing and avoid eating cold foods.
Cholera is a disease that can be prevented, and they are trying tested ways that we can prevent it. The best one, as a mother, if you take care of your kids when they have used the private, wherever you are going, the best thing that you have to do is just wash your hands, especially with running water and soap. If it's possible, get a tissue and wipe the water, because what you have actually done is that you have dislodged the germ in your hand. That is the best way. In fact, it's believed that this, what we call the universal precaution, this hand hygiene, it can be either soap and running water, or if you have the alcohol base, just washing your hands, soap and running water. And you believe that the COVID, we did so well. Almost every facility that you went, you saw Veronica bucket with soap, running water. Any facility that you went, you had the dispenser there. As a habit, we just have to wash our hands. Anywhere you use the private, wash your hands. Secondly, it's important that this is the time that you shouldn't be eating cold foods. Wherever you are, I mean, you don't know where this fly is coming from. So it's important that, look, warming of your food can just kill this germ.
Meanwhile, the Ashanti Regional Health Directorate is conversing for public support to ensure cholera-free society. From Kumasi, for Joy News, Oyemi Teria reporting.
Well, let's get more on this and bring in the Ashanti Regional Health Director, Dr. Fred Adumakubwate. He joins us live via Zoom with more. Doc, thank you for your time here on News 6. Let's get a sense of what exactly is happening in the Ashanti region. How many cases have you recorded so far? Doc, you would have to position rightly for me to hear you clearly. Just give us a sense of what exactly is happening in the Ashanti region. How many cases have you recorded so far?
Oh, we don't have any cases at the moment in Ashanti region. All that we have been trying to do is get sensitized people, educate them on the need to put in drastic preventive measures, because we know for cholera, the problem basically is to do with what we call sanitation and hygiene and wash water especially. And we know that when people are able to put in that measures drastically, we'll be able to prevent any outbreak. So that's what we have started looking at what's going around. So purely education, the people, and then our health facilities or institutions. And then we are really talking to them that, look, let's remember COVID, what we did during COVID, especially everywhere that you went in this country. There was a burning cover kit. There was soup, running water. And then because of that, if you remember, during all the pandemic, diarrhea cases were reduced drastically. It means that if we're able to do those simple hand hygiene issues, whether it's with running water, and then alcohol, it's able to address the issues that when it comes to cholera. So that's what we are really hammering and then educating people. Don't eat cold food. Warm your food. Cover your food, be careful where you eat. When you get any food, please wash them properly before you eat. This has been the message for us. And more importantly, if we should get any case, the idea is that we should be able to pick it so early so that it doesn't spread far. That is our focus in Ashanti region now.
Do you have any hot spots you're focusing on when it comes to educating the public? Because we know that here in the Greater Accra region, there are certain areas that government would have to intensify education because of the setting and also the slum areas.
Yes. I mean, you know, especially, you know, the challenges we and Greater Accra and these urbanized, they're peri-urban, densely populated areas. I mean, they are so clear in Ashanti region that are world marketed. So these are the areas that, I mean, they are overcrowding. They have challenges with sanitation and hygiene. So what we have actually started doing even is to do what we call desk review in all these areas. Desk review basically means that, look, the fact that we may not be recording cases, we have gone back to look at the people who have come to the hospital, and we are trying to see whether people presented with maybe acute watery stool or diarrhea, which we didn't pick. This is what we are trying to do. And then what we also have done is that we have sent it to all the facilities. And then we have also mounted a special community information center talking about this. So basically, we have mapped the areas up, and then we are doing more in these areas as compared to the others.
And with sensitization, money certainly is involved. How much have you set aside for the sensitization drive?
As we speak now, we are just using the normal drive. You know, when it comes to us, we have the district, we have the sub-district, and then one of the major things that we have is the health promotion. Even in our hospital, the normal OPD for us is so easy for us to do it because we don't really have money that we have allocated for this. So we are just basing and using the existing forum to do this.
Thank you, Dr. Fred Adumakubwating. He is the Ashanti Regional Health Director. Away from the health sector, let's shift our attention now to the education sector. Government has commenced the implementation of a new curriculum for senior high schools. It says the changes are to focus on building character development and holistic education to create well-rounded readiness for the students for the world. Now, the new curriculum also takes over from the existing system, which students now require to do a minimum of 7 and a maximum of 9 learning subjects in school. Let's speak to Dr. Peter Anti. He is the Executive Director for the Institute for Education Studies. Thank you for your time here on Newsdex. Now, government says this new curricula would help students build their thinking skills and also help them to improve their performance. What are your thoughts? Doc, you have to position rightly and so that we can hear you clearly and unmute your microphone as well. I can hear loud and clear. I just wanted to get you a sense of your thoughts of this new curriculum, what government is seeking to achieve, helping students think outside the box.
Thank you very much. Good morning to your viewers. Okay. Yes, I think that if you read most of the documents that come from the UNESCO, one of the things that they consider as a variable that promotes quality education is the contents that students go through. So when we are talking about quality education, we are not only looking at the infrastructure available, we are not looking at the performance that the students put up at the end of their education. You are also looking at the content, the nature of the curriculum that students are exposed to. Now in the 21st century, you cannot continue to teach your students the same things that you've taught them for the past 10 years. And I think that necessitated the need, the change or the development of the new curriculum, where students are given a variety of options to explore and also to get exposed to certain subjects that either they were not being given the opportunity to do. So this is a comprehensive reform. This is a comprehensive document that has been developed that, if it is implemented in a way that it's designed to be, would see a massive transformation in terms of the thought process of our students in the senior high school, in terms of the career options that are available to them, and in terms of the development of their complete being. I talk of the complete being because there's a whole focus on development of national values. There's a whole focus on global citizenship education. There's a focus on JC. There's focus on social emotional learning. So it's a very comprehensive document that has been developed, and I believe that it would be implemented in a way that would promote, help to achieve the focus of which is being designed to achieve.
This is coming at a time where there are concerns about our educational sector, especially where elsewhere people are already being taught how to employ the services of artificial intelligence in their academic work. But here's the concern of many. Previously, when government decided to change the curricula, getting access to learning materials for students and even teachers were very difficult. How do you propose the approach this time should be from government?
Well, I think that the lessons that we learned from the implementation of the standard-based curriculum at the basic level have really helped in the development of even the Common Core that was at the junior high school level, and this one that is about to be rolled out. I'm saying this because what we have now, even at the Common Core program, was a development of a teacher manual and a learner manual that was given to the students. And then the other publishers will come in and produce the textbooks. This time around, for the past 1 year, teachers have been exposed to varied forms of documents that will enable them to appreciate the new curriculum. Mm-hmm. So see that instead of the kind of cluster-based training that we're giving to teachers for the previous curriculum that were developed, this one, there's a continuous process of training teachers to understand the curriculum within the circles of within the environments of the schools that they are teaching in. And that's what we call the professional learning community. So teachers are constantly meeting to discuss issues in relation to the new curriculum. Documents have been developed, the teacher manuals have been developed, student or learner manuals have also been developed, which would kickstart with the implementation of the curriculum. What we have to understand is that there is the publisher aspect where people would pick the curriculum and then develop textbooks and sell. That is beyond the remit of NACA. What NACA does is to approve these books. But in the development of this curriculum, NACA, in conjunction with TTEL and the Ministry of Education, have developed teacher manuals and learner manuals that will be given to students when the academic work begins. And these are in soft copy forms, and I think some of them have been printed. So in terms of materials to kickstart the implementation process, I can say that there are a lot of materials that have been developed that I'm very privy to that I can't confirm to this. So the implementation process it looks different, and I think it's from the lessons that we learned from the previous ones that we have already implemented, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to get this right because a lot of investment have gone through this, and I believe that we should be able to get this right, and we should get this right.
Thank you, Dr. Peter Anti. He is the Executive Director for the Institute for Education Studies. Now let's do some other stories still in the education sector. A group calling itself the Coalition of Unpaid Teachers and Association, they are asking government to pay them outstanding salaries after being employed as teaching staff under the Ghana Education Service. Now, according to the teachers, they were employed permanently by government in 2023. Now, moving forward to 2024, however, there has been delays in processing their documents for the employment agreement, and this has resulted in unpaid salaries. Let's speak to Nanayao Yeboah. He is General Secretary of this Coalition of Unpaid Teachers and Arrears Ghana. That's how they term their association. Now, let's understand your key concerns. What exactly do you want?
Okay, thank you for having me. Our issue is about a lot of outstanding the government is refusing to pay us. And then this started at the middle of the year when the government recruited us. Last year in 2023, we began processing our documents, and some of our colleagues who were fortunate for their documents to be processed on time had their IDs on time. That is from January to May. But some of us who had our IDs delayed, that is from July till now, are having issues. Some of my colleagues have worked for 16 months and have received salary for only 2 months. Others have worked for 14 months and have received salary for just a month. As I am speaking with you currently, I have worked for 13 months, but then I have only received salary for 3 months. And the situation is very worrying. The government in August, that is GES, issued a communique that they are aware of the challenges and that they are going to work on it in August and September. We were rest assured that the government was going to deal with the issue. Fast forward, nothing has been done about the issue, and this is creating a lot of issues for teachers considering the current economic situation. Working for over a year without being paid your salary is a big issue in the country. And the most worrying issue is that we are validated at the end of the month. You will be validated for 13 months, but then you will receive a salary for a month or two.
Okay, Nana, I have to come in at this point. We would like to apologize, but we have to take you now live to the Conference for Lawyers in Public Sector. It's happening live here in the Greater Accra region. The Attorney General is addressing the conference. Let's listen in. Nana, I'll be back with you for your final words.
But are not limited to negotiating loans and credit transactions with international financial groups such as the World Bank, the IMF, European Bank, African Development Bank, and whatever. Negotiating the restructuring of Ghana's external indebtedness, drafting a review of international cooperation and other agreements on behalf of the government and agencies, prosecution of crime, review of local agreements, advice on defense and security arrangements affecting the state, preparation of laws for every sector of the national economy, and taking action to protect state property. It goes without saying that the scope of functions performed by the Office of Attorney General requires that they cannot by themselves live up to expectations of the nation without acting in synchrony with other legal departments of various public institutions working on behalf of the government. State attorneys cannot operate as if they exist on an island removed from the peculiarities and demands of the institutions for whom they work. There ought to be a regular coordination and comparing of notes with personnel of legal departments in all agencies of the state. Further, I hold the view that if state attorneys represent the state in such serious matters as stated already, and their work touch and affect the core of the life of the ordinary Ghanaian, then their intellectual capacity must be of the highest ilk, and indeed, there ought to be continuous training on matters of contemporary significance. Issuing formal opinions constitute the bread and butter of the Office of the Attorney General. Thus, an opinion by a state attorney on the toughest legal issues must, subject, of course, to the infallibility of man, be unquestionably reliable and first class. It is therefore not surprising that the U.S. Attorney General, whose breadth of functions and manner of operations is in many ways similar to that of the Attorney General under the Constitution, has, in addition to offices of the Deputy Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General, Associate Attorney General, Solicitor General, and Principal Attorney General, also an Office of the Legal Counsel dedicated to analyzing, research, and drafting of opinions on matters of legal importance. The Office of the Legal Counsel is like the ivory tower of the U.S. Department of Justice, and it is filled with an exceptionally intelligent and knowledgeable It is filled with exceptionally intelligent and knowledgeable minds in the service. Mr. President, we may not have an Office of the Legal Counsel in Ghana's Office of the Attorney General and Minister of Justice yet. However, in the spirit of the intellectual development of state attorneys, I consider it very imperative to hold this conference in order to serve as the building block for continuous training of the lawyer in public service, whether they are with the AG's office or another state organization. Another pertinent factor is that the law governing the contractual affairs of the state is quite different from what regulates private contracts. So different is it that I think, in addition to the regular contract law taught in the universities, there ought to be a special branch of the law described, for instance, as public contract law or state contract law. In the procurement of goods, works, and services for the state and officials purporting to exercise public power are not at liberty to do as they please, as pertains the case of private individuals. In the spirit of public accountability, public officers are bound by specifically designed laws on public procurement, state property and contract, criminal procedure, private-public partnership, public financial management, and department-specific laws such as energy, agriculture, health, sports, and finance. The constant evolution of the public service and the expansion of the Ghanaian economy enjoins a regular examination by lawyers operating in the public sector of emerging trends and matters that can potentially affect the interests of ministries, departments, and state-owned enterprises they work in. Distinguished guests, the spectrum of topics carefully selected for this three-day conference focuses on arbitration, because as we know, arbitration has become the principal means for resolving disputes between the government, its agencies, and persons they do business with. There are certain glaring dangers that I think arbitration portends for Ghana and the developing world, which seem to overlook. Whilst arbitration is touted to assure neutrality, privacy, and efficiency in the adjudication of disputes, arbitral claims filed against the government, if not diligently managed, have the tendency to collapse the entire Ghanaian economy. A single arbitral claim, if successful, can bring the economy of a developing country as Ghana to its knees. In point of fact, over the past 4 years, the value of arbitral claims against the Republic has been in excess of $9 billion. And I cite a few to illustrate the point. The financial claim by ANI Vitol against Ghana, which was initially $7 billion and subsequently reduced to $915 million after challenge in the course of proceedings by Ghana. In fact, any of these amounts, $7 billion or $915 million, could have collapsed the Ghanaian economy. By the grace of God, this financial claim was recently dismissed in its entirety by the International Arbitral Tribunal. Cassius Mining Limited's claim against the government of Ghana has a value of about $300 million. GCNet's arbitral claim involves a claim of over 4 billion Ghana cedis, the equivalent of about $250 million. The recently filed Eland arbitration claim against government of Ghana also involves a claim of over $320 million. These are just a sample of a few of the international arbitration claims against Ghana. Domestically, there have been claims in Ghana in excess of over 15 trillion Ghana cedis, successfully defended by the Office of Attorney General against the state. I know this conference will be a seminal step in improving the legal framework within the public sector and the interactions with public-private partnerships. We have the rare benefit of learning from the rich insights of distinguished and accomplished speakers from a variety of jurisdictions around the continent, from the United States of America, Canada, Mauritius, Nigeria, Tanzania, and of course Ghana, on a broad array of topics. A reflection on the pursuit of these claims against the state leads me to conclude that we must reform the laws governing arbitration and the institution of civil claims against the state, whilst taking a critical look at contracting and contract management on behalf of the state. Mr. President, as I recently noted at the African Regional Forum and the International Bar Association Conference held in Mexico City, Mexico, we cannot discount the prejudice Ghana and the whole of Africa in general often suffers in international arbitration fora. It is quite curious that in some instances, companies which fail to make out any claim in our domestic courts succeed in extremely huge international arbitration actions, sometimes mounted on the back of contracts which have failed to receive the relevant statutory and constitutional approvals in the countries in which they operate. This phenomenon is not because of a weakness of the judicial systems of African countries, or indeed Ghana's, but simply because of the nature of international arbitration, particularly the secrecy of proceedings, flexibility of rules, and the finality or non-appealability of awards, which I've just referred to. It should not be misconstrued as saying that Ghana or any African nation should shy away from international arbitration. Far from that. However, the vulnerability of arbitration to abuse and fraud highlights the necessity for more robust safeguards in commercial disputes involving state parties, where the hard purse of the nation is at stake. We must boost the integrity of our legal systems by setting up fair and efficient mechanisms for commercial dispute adjudication and strengthening the systems for the conduct of arbitration in our respective countries. In this regard, the President of Ghana recently launched the Ghana Alternative Dispute Resolution Center. This center presents a viable venue for the resolution of multi-billion dollar commercial disputes and cases involving the use of the nation's natural resources right here in Ghana. But I still recognize that there's a need to make further reform to the pursuit of arbitration against the state. Thus, I recently presented to Cabinet a proposed amendment to the State Property and Contract Act of 1960 to compel all contracts involving the state and its agencies as parties to not only stipulate Ghana law as a governing law, but also to have Ghana as a seat of arbitration, and with the ADR Center in Ghana being the venue for the arbitration. I know a concern for the international experts in this room will be whether these measures we are taking in Ghana will mark the beginning of the end for their involvement in arbitration for Ghana. But I will say no. You can still be involved in international arbitration in Ghana. And as we all know, an arbitration is international not because of the forum or venue for the hearing, but largely because of the parties involved in the underlying transaction. We will therefore be still involved in international arbitration involving Ghana, with Accra as the seat of at the seat and venue for the arbitration. The proposed amendment is just to address situations like the ENI case, in respect of which hearing was conducted in Paris. The contract was governed by Ghana law, but Sweden was the seat of arbitration and the hearing was in France. So even though the contract, as I stated, was governed by Ghana law and the proceedings were in Paris, the procedural law for the arbitration was Swedish law, and any award resulting from the proceedings would have had to be enforced in Sweden. This is quite... and arbitration are the focus of this conference. The criminal division of the Office of Attorney General is not left out. The DPP herself and the lead chief state attorneys from the criminal division have a session on reforms in the criminal justice system. Mr. President, I cannot resume my seat without commenting on the need to enhance the capacity of the Office of Attorney General to place itself in the position to rise to the demands of the complexity of modern legal needs for the state, of the state. In a few days, the office will complete the recruitment process of 70 more attorneys, bringing the number of state attorneys appointed in the tenure of the current president to about 190. This constitutes about half of the number of state attorneys currently on the roll, that which is about 370. So Mr. President has indeed done well, and we must commend him. However, we need about 1,500 state attorneys for a proper discharge of the functions of the Office of Attorney General under Article 88 of the Constitution. I envisage that every ministry, department, agency, or district assembly ought to be serviced by at least one state attorney. A situation whereby some ministries, departments, agencies, or metropolitan, municipal, and district assemblies employ their own lawyers does not augur well for proper harmony and synchronization of government's legal work. Thus, my vision is that in the near future, to ensure cohesion in the public service and to avoid an uncoordinated approach which leads to inefficiencies, all lawyers working for each of these public institutions ought to be employed by the Office of Attorney General. I must express my sincerest appreciation to you once again, Mr. President, for the earnest support you've extended to the office by way of improvement to the conditions of service of state attorneys. The completion of the 12-story edifice, comprising 10-story above ground and two-tier basement for a car park, the new head office of the Office of Attorney General, described as a law house, which was commissioned by you on 10th June 2024, stands as an imposing symbol of all your efforts to improve the conditions in which state attorneys work. Towards achieving the vision of a public, modern public legal service, I hereby assure you that in the next MPP administration, every regional office of the Minister of Justice will own its permanent office building. Ladies and gentlemen, this conference could not have been possible without the yeoman's effort to the organizing committee, led by the Director of Legal at the Minister of Energy, who is also a Chief State Attorney, Mrs. Sarah Fafapudo. We are immensely grateful to you and your team. Our sincerest appreciation also goes to the state institutions and enterprises which responded to the call for some funds to sponsor this program, particularly the Ghana National Petroleum Corporation, GNPC, Cocoa Board, Ghana Revenue Authority, the Consolidated Bank of Ghana, Ghana Gas Limited, Agricultural Development Bank, and all. I am with a fervent hope that the conference will come up with solutions to reduce the number of disputes arising from relations between state institutions and third parties and among themselves, whilst alleviating the significant financial burden on the government and state-owned agencies. To the various distinguished guests and speakers who have joined us from over the world, I see that Accra has a very vibrant and riveting social life, which I'm sure you will take the time to experience over the course of your stay. Fafa has a full lowdown on all the places to go: Ace Nightclub, St. Pablo, Kozu, Shogun, and what have you. I bet you indeed have a wonderful time. Thank you very much. God bless us all.
Newly inducted president and her executives who are now one day in office. Members of the Ghana Bar Association, fellow Ghanaians, ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to be with you this morning as we gather to honor the vital role of the public sector service, legal service. As lawyers serving within the public sector, you stand as pillars of our nation's legal framework. Your duty transcends ordinary legal practice. It is about embedding legal excellence and ethical standards into every facet of public administration. This is no easy feat, but it requires an ongoing commitment to professional development, coordination, and a constant engagement with national policy goals. The Ghanaian public sector, like any complex institution, relies on clear, harmonized legal processes to function efficiently. However, despite our best efforts, we still encounter challenges with legal coordination and consistency across ministries, departments, and agencies. In an era defined by rapid legislative evolution and emerging global challenges, this conference represents a timely response to these challenges, aimed at forging a stronger, more cohesive legal culture within our public institutions. Today's conference, this pioneering gathering, is a reflection of the bold vision of the Attorney General, Godfrey Abuadame, to alleviate and elevate the legal service. It brings together the esteemed lawyers who serve across ministries, departments, and agencies, and whose work safeguards our resources, fortifies our democracy, and bolsters the rule of law. As a former Attorney General, I have seen it firsthand, the power of a strong, capable public legal service. State attorneys and public lawyers are indeed guardians of the public trust. A well-trained and well-resourced public legal team can protect the nation's assets, advance the rights of ordinary Ghanaians, and ensure that our governance operates within the bounds of justice. It is in the force behind our collective effort to make Ghana a place where the rule of law is not just spoken, but also lived. In this Fourth Republic, the role of the public legal service has expanded dramatically. Our growing economy, increasing investments, and the rise of citizen rights have added new dimensions to public legal service. As the complexities of civil litigation deepen, the criminal justice landscape is also rapidly evolving. Advances in technology, in a society that is ever more aware of its rights, demand that we continue to build a public legal service fit for the 21st century. I support fully the Attorney General's drive to develop a modern, resourceful public legal service equipped and empowered to meet these new challenges. Indeed, since 2017, we have made significant strides to build this service. We have recruited 119 more state attorneys, including 70 whose appointments will soon be finalized. This recruitment represents almost half of the lawyers currently in the office of the Attorney General. Our efforts have also extended to legal departments across state-owned institutions whose staff strength has more than doubled. Today, some 600 public lawyers stand ready to serve. Supporting these lawyers goes beyond numbers. The Office of the Attorney General has in recent years offered scholarships for advanced legal studies, allowing state attorneys to pursue further education at world-renowned institutions. Ladies and gentlemen, fellow members of the Bar, this conference, with its focus on arbitration, will advance our goal of fostering collaboration among lawyers who represent the interests of government and its entities. By enhancing our expertise in international commercial arbitration, investor-state arbitration, and contract negotiation, we not only reduce disputes, but also alleviate the financial burden these disputes place on the exchequer of the state. In this spirit, let us recognize the progress the Akufo-Addo administration has made in bolstering the capacity of the Office of the Attorney General to handle international arbitration independently. In years past, foreign legal expertise was often relied upon to defend Ghana's interests in the global arena. Today, we're seeing a transformed office, one with the competence and resource to champion Ghana's position internationally, achieving favorable outcomes without deferring to external counsel. This shift towards self-reliance is a testament to the strength and proficiency of our own legal profession. The Attorney General has been at the forefront of the transformative legal reforms that strengthen accountability, expand access to justice, and advance legal education. Among these are the Contracts Amendment Act of 2023, Act 1114, which prohibits compound interest in state contracts, protecting the public purse from undue financial burden. The Criminal and Other Offences Procedure Amendment Act of 2022, Act 1079, which introduces plea bargaining into our legal system, promoting quicker resolutions within criminal justice. The Whistleblower Amendment Act of 2023, Act 1103, which incentivizes transparency by rewarding whistleblowers, creating a strong environment for accountability. And the establishment of the Office of the Registrar of Companies and the digitalization of some 85% of company registrations, easing access for businesses and entrepreneurs. My government's commitment to the legal sector extends to the development of infrastructure, as evidenced by the construction of 100 courthouses across the country, and the development of 121 residential units nationwide for judges, alongside the construction of the magnificent 10-story law house in Accra, which will soon house the Office of the Attorney General. We're also undertaking the historic endeavor of calling some 4,500 lawyers to the bar since October 2021, doubling the legal workforce in our country. Looking ahead, I'm inspired by the Attorney General's vision for a law house in each region, creating dedicated spaces for public legal services across Ghana. This vision of a strong, united legal framework is the legacy we aim to build. Ladies and gentlemen, members of the bar, as public sector lawyers, the path we walk is one that demands courage, commitment, integrity, and a ceaseless pursuit of excellence. This conference is a testimony to the value we place on your contributions and the recognition that without a strong legal backbone, our public service cannot function at its highest potential. Government is committed to supporting your development, ensuring that our legal teams are well prepared to face the challenges of our time. Together, through coordinated efforts and a shared dedication to ethical practices, we can establish a legacy of legal excellence that will strengthen the foundations of our public service and thereby of our state for generations to come. In closing, let us leave this conference with a renewed sense of duty and a clear understanding of our role in advancing and enhancing the rule of law. I look forward to witnessing the transformative impact of your contributions on our nation, and I'm confident that through your efforts, we will build an efficient, cohesive, and legally empowered public service for the benefit of all Ghanaians. I've been assured by the Attorney General that a practice I initiated as Attorney General when Ursula Owusu, now Communications Minister, was my special assistant of the ministry being responsible for the payments of bar dues and accommodation for all state attorneys to enable them attend the annual bar conference has been maintained. I'm very happy about that. May God bless us all and our homeland Ghana and make her great and strong. I thank you for your attention.
The President of our Republic, Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo, on such a beautiful valedictory speech, bringing meaning to our theme. Mr. President, since you're home, we'd like to have 5 pictures with you, if that's okay. Ladies and gentlemen, please be seated briefly. I shall now invite to join the President on stage, our host, the Attorney General, together with the Solicitor General, in the company of the President of the Bar and our partner, the Executive.
Well, President Akufo-Addo there reiterating his commitment and his government commitment to ensuring that the legal system in Ghana is robust. He just made some key salient points I'll just like to take us through as we wait for better connection to go there. He says that his government is stepping up efforts to ensure that they fully resource the Office of the Attorney General to independently handle international arbitration. He says this will help reduce the financial burden. Earlier we heard from the Attorney General, Godfrey Abodame, giving us just a breakdown of the number of individuals they are recruiting into the service. It says about 70 of them will be recruited into the service to aid the legal service. He says that their target is actually 1,500 state attorneys. So far, they have 370. And he says the president, within the last 3 months, has actually recruited 190, which is more than half or close to half of the actual amount. We'll be taking you back there shortly. You're still watching NewsX. Please stay tuned there.